Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster along with my buddy. It's good to see Tom Fairbanks again on the other side of the glass. Tom, how are you? How was your Thanksgiving?
Is that he who you see?
Looks like it. I mean, I'm 6 feet away, and there's a huge piece of glass.
Yes, we always social distance, don't we?
Yeah.
Thanksgiving was uneventful, which can be a good thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing. It's Buckmaster Midweek Edition Wednesday, second day of December 2020. Doing our darndest right here on the radio, trying to bring folks together in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios on 1030 Tucson's Voice for Trusted News Talk Worldwide Live Listening on my website. We take the live feed from KVOI.com, but it's BuckmasterShow.com. The Buckmaster Show live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Without further ado, let's go now on the live line. Tucson City Councilman, Democrat, Ward 6, Steve Kasacha. Councilman, how are you today?
I'm doing well. You caught me right in the middle of a yawn. So.
Oh, really? Did not? I would never have known.
Yeah.
How was your Thanksgiving? Uneventful?
Well, yes and no. I mean, we did a backyard thing with my wife and her mother, her mom. There's the three of us. Normally, that would have been, 25 people out at our sister-in-law's house. And so, we did the change the way most other people did. But it had a local, a niece who's a physical therapist in a local hospital, came down with COVID. And so she's still isolating with symptoms. And, it's just, it's the world we're living in now. Everyone's doing things a little bit differently. Before I lose the thought though, one of our mutual friends and colleagues, John C. Scott, lost his wife right before Thanksgiving as well, and Amy. And so that life goes on with all of its challenges, such as John's loss, and then we have COVID lumped on top of it. So it's just been a really challenging year, I guess, to say the very least, is an understatement.
Yeah, my heart goes out to John with the loss of Amy. I've known John for a very long time, as have you, Steve, and it just breaks my heart. And my best wishes for John as he tries to move forward. It is a very difficult time, and this mandatory curfew, it's going to be interesting to see whether Doug Ducey, the governor, will step in and say the city of Tucson cannot issue a mandatory curfew.
Well, so predictably, the governor scheduled a 3:30 press conference for today, less than 24 hours after we took our vote. Here's the reality, and we've had this conversation, sadly, since March. COVID's not going to be under control as long as people are taking half measures and relying on people's judgments and treating this thing like it's just a bad flu season. You mentioned Thanksgiving. People showed over Thanksgiving that they're not going to willingly comply with the advice that public health authorities are giving, and therefore we sat and watched millions, literally millions of people cram into planes and in airports over that holiday. That is going to result in more surges on top of the surge that we're already seeing. Yesterday, for the first time since March, the state of Arizona had over 10,000 new cases. Pima County, we had nearly 1,000, but there were four more fatalities in Pima County. So it's this is not going to just end on its own as long as people keep pretending it's not there or acting as though it's just going to go away on its own or that they're immune. So we have to act, and frankly, what we did yesterday is probably too little too late to avoid seeing the infections and the fatalities continue to escalate through Christmas and beyond into next year, because again, we're going to see probably very similar things happen over the Christmas holiday in terms of people's behavior. I think that we struck a decent balance last night. 2 days before the vote, or the day before the vote, when I learned about it, I was told that the hospital associations are going to make a plea to the governor that he do a mandatory statewide curfew and a shelter-in-place, mandatory statewide. Based on that advice, I said, I'm certainly going to back the healthcare industry. If they're asking for a mandatory 8 p.m. curfew, then I'm going to support the health industry. What I found out, though, was in speaking to Judy Rich from TMC and some other folks from Banner, is that they don't feel that the 8 p.m. curfew would have been effective on its own, and they are going to lobby Ducey to do something more significant statewide. So based on that, we had a pretty good conversation yesterday at the council. I felt as though our input should have been informed by the hospitals, who did not feel an 8 p.m. curfew was going to be effective. But we did hear from a lot of local restaurants and some other retailers who, frankly, had just made purchases of perishables. If we had imposed 8 p.m. last night, which is what the mayor's original proposal would have been, they'd have had to lose that product and eat those costs. I didn't think that was fair to them, especially given the fact that what was being proposed was not going to be a game changer in terms of the trend in terms of COVID infections. So what we did was I also spoke to Chuck Huckleberry. They're going to have at the county. They're going to have a special meeting on Friday to talk about what their options are. Right now, they have a voluntary 10 p.m. curfew. They can't do mandatory. So what we decided last night was let's impose a mandatory 10 p.m. curfew effective 72 hours after last night. So it's Friday night at 10 p.m. and give the county board of supervisors a chance to respond to what we did. But also, more importantly, give the businesses a chance to respond, to act, change shifts. The places like movie theaters, the Roadhouse Cinema, for instance, if we had done the 8 p.m. Curfew last night, that means they would have had to start movies at before 6 p.m. to get people out and home before the curfew hit, and that would have just killed them. So I think we struck a decent balance. The other thing that we did is that we're going to allocate another $3 million to small business relief through our CARES money. And the challenge there will be get it out the door. I mean, get it out the door like pronto, because they're going to simply need this, to continue to survive because of all the impact that businesses have had throughout the course of this year.
Steve, let me ask you about evictions. A lot of people very worried about the end of the year. What's the thinking on that from the city concerning evictions?
So we have, again, more CARES money. We've allocated several million dollars to that we're allocating through some nonprofits to people who are facing eviction. We've also done it not just for eviction, but for things such as getting your water and utility bills paid and those kinds of things. But that is an issue that the governor is also going to have to address. He has right now an eviction moratorium through the end of this calendar year. Kirsten Engel, who's just an absolutely top-drawer state legislator, penned a letter to the governor last week with three other legislators asking several things. Number one, 90-day extension on that eviction moratorium. And then also, really importantly, is ease the process by which people have to go through in order to even apply for the benefits. Because we're talking about people who don't have all the documentation that's necessary right now. Let the landlord provide a statement and get the payment directly to the landlord. But our hands are tied at the state level again, but we are doling out cash. This really is going to be a significant issue involving thousands and thousands of people in Pima County if the governor doesn't push that eviction moratorium back. And here's the reality that Ducey needs to face, and that is that the state has also allocated millions of dollars to eviction to support people so they don't get evicted. The problem is the cumbersome nature by which people have to apply means they've still got millions of dollars sitting there unallocated, and people need the dollars. So what Kirsten Engel did and last week was absolutely dead on. The state needs to step up and make it easier to get the dollars out the door and extend that moratorium.
I am so delighted that Tuesday was Giving Tuesday yesterday, and I'm hearing the food bank brought in like $400,000, our community food bank. And we need that assistance. So many people are looking for food assistance, especially this holiday season, Steve.
Yeah, it is. It is true. And Michael McDonald's does a great job out there at the community food bank. If people want to donate, frankly, a better way than taking your canned food out there is to do what you just suggested, and that is give them some cash, because the community food bank, their purchasing power is a lot more robust than what yours and mine is. But they're doing a great job. And, you know, another thing that you see on the news every now and then are these extremely long lines.
Oh, yeah.
At the, you know, at food banks all over the country. And it's something that, you know, I take for granted. You know, we didn't have to go hunt and peck for the food at Thanksgiving, but lots of people are. And it's a amazingly important community benefit that Michael's running out there.
Yeah, one of the things to really be thankful for this holiday season, the Community Food Bank. Steve Kasacek, stick around. I want to talk about another place that we can all be thankful for, and that's Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Mona's has they're really getting ready, cranked up for the holidays. So many people enjoyed their pies over Thanksgiving. We had some of the Mona's rolls on our table, and I probably ate a couple of them, a couple too many, but they sure were delicious, and they are now taking orders at Mona's to get ready for Christmas. Their website is monasdanishbakery.com. Check it out. Put in your order for your holiday pies, for your dinner rolls, and on Christmas morning or Christmas Eve morning, wouldn't a Danish Kringle be delicious? That flaky pastry. We brought one in. I brought one in, courtesy of owner and chief baker Steve, to the station last week. It had almond filling, and the thing was gone in about 5 minutes. Folks here loved it, and of course, I knew they would. It's a great pastry. All right, we'll take our break right here. It's Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Be right back with Steve Kasacek right after this.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is in the process of developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan, and soon will consider which projects best address transportation needs across the greater Tucson region. As part of its ongoing public outreach, the RTA invites your early input on which projects meet regional goals. Learn more about plan development and provide input at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com. Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks. a modified guest experience, prioritizing social distancing and safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures that your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. The Buckmaster Show live line sponsored by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go back to the live line. Tucson City Councilman Ward 6, Democrat Steve Kasacek, and with us on the live line is Ken. He has a quick question for the councilman. Go ahead, Ken.
Hello.
Hi, Ken. What's on your mind?
Okay, a few things, if I may. I'll just throw the questions out, and you can answer or
not. Real quickly, why don't you narrow it down to one, okay?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I ride the bus pretty frequently, and it's with most of the drivers, it's up to the passenger's volition if they're going to wear the mask or not.
Hmm.
And it's supposed to be mandatory.
All right. Thank you, Ken. Let's find out what Councilman Kasacek, do you know anything about that, Steve?
Yeah, we have a mask mandate in public spaces where social distancing is not possible. We are not asking our bus operators to physically confront people. They can stop if there's an issue going on between passengers and ask for security assistance. We have seen very high compliance on our buses, and the drivers do have masks that they can distribute and make available. What Ken raises is a significant issue with us. We have the local mask mandate, but we're not causing fist fights over it that you sometimes see on the tube as well. And that's the answer is if you cannot properly social distance, you're supposed to, by local ordinance, have a mask, and we make them available to people.
What's going on with recycling and glass? This has been in the news over the last day or so.
Yeah, it's been in my garage for the last year or so, and I'm totally ready for that door to open and let it go somewhere else, but it's a good program. So what I've been doing, is people have been dropping off glass bottles for the last year, and I've been crushing them. We have now turned over to TDOT, Department of Transportation, over 2 tons worth of sand crushed bottles.
Wow.
And they've used it for every sort of thing. They've used it for concrete mix. They've used it for filling ruts in alleys back in the olden days when it used to rain. I've given the Living Streets Alliance people enough to fill over 100 sandbags that they can use for things like Ciclovia and holding down their barricades. So there are multiple secondary uses for it. What we're going to do, though, finally, the council has approved, starting in February next year, we are going to stop taking glass in the blue barrels curbside, but we're going to provide 22 off-site locations scattered all over town that people can do what they're already doing here at Ward 6, and that is drop the glass off, and then we're going to purchase a commercial scale crusher, put it out at the landfill, and the city's going to crush all the glass that people turn in and use it in a secondary market. And I just mentioned a few different options that we can use it in. Right now it's costing us over $500,000 a year to recycle the glass. And one of the reasons for that is because there's virtually no market for it. And so our recycling vendor, Republic Services, actually takes the glass, transports it out of state, and finds a market out of state. So we're paying right now to collect the glass and to turn it over to a republic. The idea is not to make a bunch of money off of it, but the idea is to use it in those secondary markets that I just described. Avoid having or stop having to buy sand at the quarry, which is a cost saving to the city, and keep some of the glass bottles out of the landfill if people buy into the program. I would like eventually to see the program expand so that instead of having off-site, these 22 off-site locations, that we find a way to provide curbside collection. But we're kind of taking baby steps into this. The first real baby step was one bottle at a time in my garage. The second one is a little bit bigger step, and that's commercial scale out at the landfill. And then hopefully we can get to dual streaming curbside, because a lot of other jurisdictions are doing that. And maybe more than just dual stream, we're also doing commercial scale composting out at the landfill that we're going to be able to use in our secondary markets as well. And so I think we're a leader in this. And just from a very personal perspective, it's been a long time coming because I'm tired of crushing mountains.
Let's take another quick call. Roberta is on the live line. Hey, Roberta.
Hi. Hi, Steve. How can someone who is homebound and without any help to get their glass to the city?
Well, I'm the only one who's doing the crushing, and it's at the Ward 6 office. I have several neighborhoods who have people kind of traveling. In fact, I know Sam Hughes just did it last week. They had a person to kind of travel around the neighborhood and gathered up, and they brought them here as a neighborhood. So I would, at this point, suggest reach out to some of your neighbors and recruit them as well to gather up their glass and then come by your place and get yours and bring it on over here.
Steve Kasacek, is this deal for real that was in the paper today about One South Church, a boutique hotel in Tucson's tallest building?
That's 75 Broadway. One South Church is a different project. Yes, it's a great project. Reina Huevo's involved with it. So is the city. And we've got now, what, five? Small hotels going in the downtown core, something like that, all privately funded. They're kind of the singles and doubles that I was advocating for 10 years ago when the city was about to jump in with both feet on a $200 million hotel that the city would have backstopped the debt on.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah, thankfully we dodged that bullet, but now we've got several in the downtown core. The AC Marriott was the first one. There's one by the TCC. You mentioned this one. There are several others that are going up. And so by a matter of iterative steps, we're getting to the scale that we would have had with that convention center hotel, but it's with private dollars and not the city taking on the downside risk if the things go south. I'd add to that, though, because it's germane, is that Rio Nuevo is putting about $70 million into the Tucson Convention Center. And that is going to be a big deal for attracting conventions back when life gets back to some semblance of normal. We'll have the multiple hotels, so we'll have the room capacity and the scale, and we'll have a renovated convention center that's going to be attractive to the out-of-state conventions that are coming in. Sadly, yesterday we had an announcement from the American Gem and Trade Association that they're canceling their gem show for next January.
I did not hear that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so now we've had TGMS, the JGX show, and AGTA. Those are the three biggies that have pulled out. So the TCC, the good news is that they're going to be able to do the construction because there aren't going to be a bunch of events. The bad news is that's a significant financial hit to the city.
Wow.
And so, we are hoping against hope that vaccines work. They come sooner than later. People take the COVID restrictions seriously, and they help us through this so that next year we're not having the same conversation about vacant conventions and gem shows and rodeo parades and all that stuff that we're losing. And the book festival, they canceled too. While they may be semi-successful virtually, those kinds of events, from a tax generation standpoint locally, it's a big hit.
So no gem show this year.
Well,
next year.
So there are 30 or 40 very small ones, the ones that are operating out of the motels along the freeway and out at the old Holodome. They're still scattered around town, but they're working on kind of a one-off process with the Pima County Health Department, and they're going to have to follow the same kinds of protocols that people are being asked to follow, and that includes limiting the number of people inside at a given time, the social distancing, the masking, the cleansing. So I know from having spoken to a couple of the smaller ones that they're having trouble making this make sense.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, do we even want to bother doing it? Because you got to remember, these aren't people who are just packing up and moving across town. Many of them are traveling from out of state.
Sure.
Some of the big ones, the ones that I just mentioned, they were having people travel internationally to get here, which
wow.
means you got to make prior advance arrangements. And the other thing about the TCC is that we could be given a phone call tomorrow from the state of Arizona saying, you need to transform the Tucson Convention Center into an alternate care facility.
Right. Going to have to run.
Okay.
Okay. Steve Kasacek, thank you very much. Talk to you soon. Thanks.
All right. Take care.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Welcome back. It is the midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show, the first Wednesday in December. You know, I'm looking at these numbers from Green Things. 25,000 poinsettias have been grown there. They grow that locally, these poinsettias. I don't know this for a fact, but I'm just guessing they've got to be one of the largest nurseries growing poinsettias in the United States with those kinds of numbers. Tom, that's amazing. They start growing them pretty much right after the holidays.
Are poinsettias native to this part of the world?
I believe they're from Mexico.
Okay, well, that's close enough.
Sort of semi-tropical. But anyway, I've been pushing this idea, Tom. There are a lot of lonely, shut-in people this holiday season. If you've got a neighbor who's alone, why not buy a poinsettia from them, from Green Things, and deliver it, leave it on the front porch or whatever, and let them know it's there, and just a little something to cheer up some folks that are going to be alone this holidays. Green Things, 50 years and still growing, 3384 East River Road. Their website is greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Zocalo Village has the unique collection of Mexican folk art, holiday treasures, home decor, and more. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line to Rex Scott. Rex Scott, a Democrat who will be the new Pima County Supervisor in District Number 1. Rex, how are you? Congratulations.
Hey, Bill, thank you very much. I appreciate this opportunity to share some time with you and your listeners and hope we get many opportunities to do so in the next 4 years. I wondered if I could really quickly just join my friend Steve Kozacik in expressing my condolences to John C. Scott, a friend to many of us on the loss of his wife, Amy. I know there's a GoFundMe campaign that Jim Hanley has started to help John and his family during this very troubling time, and I hope all the people in the community who have enjoyed John's shows over the years will step up and help his family at this time.
Thank you very much for bringing that up, Rex. John, we're longtime friends. I'm so sorry for John right now. It breaks my heart with the loss of his dear wife, Amy, so we all wish him well. Rex, let me ask you, are you officially now a supervisor? Are you considered a supervisor-elect? Where's the process right now?
I am a supervisor-elect. Our first meeting is January 5th, and so the five members of the current board will be the board for the rest of this month, but I believe their last meeting as the current board is December 15th.
How does the transition work? Are you getting cooperation, or how is it all working?
You know, I really want to express my gratitude to Supervisor Allie Miller. She has reached out to me and has made her staff available to me to help with transition. She's been very gracious, very kind, and we are going to have a smooth transition from her office to mine as a result.
Now, you won by less than, what was the final number there? Was it less than 1,000 votes?
It's a number I'll never forget, John, and it'll be my favorite number for a long time. 730 votes was the final margin.
Rex, what do you think made the difference? Why are you the first Democrat elected in Supervisorial District Number 1 since 1972?
Well, I don't know that we will be able to answer that question with certainty until we have all of the numbers, and we won't have those for a while. But my speculation is that in a district where there's really only a small separation between the two parties. There's about 3,200 more Republicans than Democrats in our district. What I'm guessing is that most Republicans voted for our opponent. Most Democrats voted for me. And I think where we made the difference was we did get some Republicans to cross over. And I think, but I think where we really won the day was with the independents. There are about 42,000, 43,000 independents in District 1. And our marketing campaign really aggressively targeted those voters. And I think when we have the official canvas and are able to crunch those numbers, that's going to tell the tale. But, you know, when 730 is the difference, you know, it really came down to who got their message out to the greatest number of persuadable voters, and we were able to do that. And I'm very, very grateful to the voters of District 1, whether they supported me or not. And it's now my responsibility to be an open-minded and approachable representative for everybody in the district.
Is the process going to be a little easier for you? You are returning to public service. As I recall, you're a former city councilman in the city, I believe it's Athens, Ohio. Is that correct, Rex Scott?
That's correct. I was elected to Athens City Council in 1987 when I was 24 years old. I was reelected in 1989. And then I resigned my position right before I had to run for reelection a second time in 1991 to move to Pima County. And I've lived here ever since and have been working in our schools as a teacher, an assistant principal, and a principal until I retired in 2019. And a few months after I retired, threw my hat into the ring for this race.
You've got four Democrats, and you've got the one lone now Republican, who, by the way, will be with us on the program tomorrow, Steve Christie. So how do you kind of bring this board together? What are you thinking about? You've got three new board members. Each of you, I'm sure, have your own kind of agenda items that you would like to see moving forward. How are you approaching this, Rex Scott?
One of the things I said during the campaign, and I want to be true to this statement throughout my tenure on the Board of Supervisors, is that local government, because it is the closest to the people and has the most direct impact on the quality of their lives, really should be the least partisan. And at any time, but especially during this extraordinary time where we're dealing with the pandemic and then ultimately the recovery from the pandemic, the expectations of the public is that the five of us work in concert with each other to provide the service that they expect and to produce results for them. So I think if we keep that focus on service and results and don't be distracted by selfishness or partisan concerns, then the five of us are going to work together really well. I had an outstanding conversation Thanksgiving week with Supervisor Christie. We talked for about 45 minutes. He was visiting family out of state and was kind enough to take some time to talk with me. And I view him as my partner in governance every bit as much as the other three Democrats on the board.
So you've really extended an olive branch to Mr. Christie. You really want to work with him. Is that what I'm hearing, Rex?
I think that is what the voters expect from all five of us, is that we are dealing with the greatest challenge of any of our lifetimes, and the public expects us to work in partnership on their behalf. And we don't have time to be distracted by parochial or partisan issues. We need to be working together on behalf of the people of Pima County. There's a tremendous amount of suffering that is happening out in our community, and it's going to get worse before it gets better. And even after we have a handle on the virus and are in recovery, there's going to be a lot that we're going to need to do to help people to get their lives back in order.
All right, we're going to pause right here. If folks have a question or a comment for Pima County Supervisor-elect Rex Scott, District Number 1, call us on the live line, 790-2040. But right now we're going to take a break. It's our midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. We'll be right back with Supervisor-elect Rex Scott.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for the draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. One of the things that I like to do in my spare time is take a look at travel websites and start dreaming of faraway places. Well, one of them's not that far away. It's 3 hours east of Tucson, Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Things are going to get better in 2021, so now is the time to start planning for when the Land of Enchantment reopens to tourists. Right now, of course, they are not welcoming out-of-state visitors, but they will once we get this vaccine up and running and things return somewhat to normal. People will be able to pile in the car again and take off, road trip time, baby, and head over to Silver City. You can start your planning at southwestnewmexico.org. There you'll find all sorts of information about great places to stay and all sorts of opportunities to get outside hiking in the Gila National Wilderness and visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. I believe Teddy Roosevelt was the one that proclaimed the Cliff Dwellings National Monument a national monument early in the 1900s. All right, let's go back on the live line. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Pima County Supervisor-elect Rex Scott with us in my district, Pima County Supervisorial District number one. So, Supervisor-elect Scott, what is on your agenda for 2021?
I'm certain that dealing with the remainder of the COVID-19 pandemic and then helping the community to recover from it is going to be the focus of most of the work that we do on the board, not only in this coming year, but I think for most of our first term. And I think one of the things that we're going to have to keep an eye on is the potential effects on the county budget. Less than 40% of the money that supports the county's general fund comes from local property taxes. The rest of it comes from a small number of fees, but largely from state shared revenues, especially sales tax and the highway user revenue funds. And if there is not a coronavirus relief package passed by the Congress, hopefully an initial one in this lame duck session, as has been discussed by both President-elect Biden and Senator McConnell, if that doesn't happen, there's going to be a cascading effect on state and local governments, and that could have an impact on Pima County's budget. So that's going to be a priority, as is helping different segments of the community to recover from the pandemic. There are right around 75,000 people, according to research from the University of Arizona in Pima County, who haven't been able to stay current with their rent, and so they could be subject to eviction if the Centers for Disease Control doesn't extend the eviction moratorium that expires on December 31st. If they don't, we're going to have to look at how to address that locally. And it was interesting, during the campaign, there was a forum held by the Pima County Interfaith Council, and all of the people who are currently on the, or who are going to be on the Board of Supervisors next month, committed to a local eviction moratorium extending into the spring if the federal government does not extend its moratorium. So it was good to hear that commitment from all five of us.
Yeah, it's a huge issue, and we were just discussing that with Councilman Kasachek at the beginning of the show about in the city the whole deal with the evictions and the rents that are coming due. It's a big problem. And you know, you mentioned state shared revenues. There's going to be a lot less of that. Look at the city of Tucson, Rex Scott. We just heard Councilman Kasachek tell us all of the major players for the Gem Show now are out. There may be a few small vendors operating, but basically the Gem Show is off. All of our big events early into 2021 are off. This is going to be tough times here early into this year.
Very tough times and it's always the people in our society who suffer the most, even in good times, who are going to need the most support and assistance as we come out of the pandemic. And that's going to require the board to do a lot of listening, a lot of outreach to our public and private sector partners so that we can make sure that the people who need our help the most get it. And that's why to go back to what we were talking about in the previous segment, it's so important that the five of us are focused on the work that we have to do, and not allowing us to be distracted by anything else.
Are you going to have a pretty much an open door policy? Do you want to hear from constituents?
Yes. That has always been my practice as a middle and high school principal, to have both an open door and an open mind. I want our office to not only be noted for its responsiveness to constituent concerns, but also its outreach. I've always believed as a leader that that there's no way to over-inform people. And so we're going to do our best to not only be models of constituent service, but also models of constituent outreach.
So we have this, the voluntary curfew, 10 o'clock in Pima County. Now the city's got what they're hoping will be a mandatory one. It's going to be interesting to see now what the governor has to say this afternoon. By mid-January, when you assume your position officially on the board, hopefully a lot of this peak period will be behind us, but we're still going to probably have to be extremely cautious.
And I don't think it will be behind us, unfortunately. Our first board meeting is January 5th, and we're not going to know at that point the effect of any Christmas travel or other holiday travel or gatherings on coronavirus numbers, just like we're waiting for 2 weeks after Thanksgiving to see the actual effect of people gathering and traveling for that holiday. So what I am hopeful of, based on what we're hearing from public health experts both locally and nationally, is that vaccines will start to be administered to people who live in long-term care facilities and are public health providers first, and that hopefully by the start of the second quarter of 2021, vaccines will start to be widely disseminated. And perhaps by the time we get to the middle or the end of spring, things will start to look more normal. But I think we're in for a long slog, and the next few weeks are going to be absolutely critical in terms of not just our public responses, but our individual actions. And it's really individual actions and the need to think selflessly and not act recklessly and selfishly that are going to help us get through this.
All right. We'll look forward to our visit with you in January after you've officially been installed on the board of Pima County. Rex Scott, thank you very much. Again, congratulations on your victory as you now push forward into 2021. Thank you very much.
Bill, thank you very much. Really enjoyed the time with you, Tom, and your listeners.
Thank you very much. Bill Buckmaster with you, and Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass. We're getting ready to wrap up our midweek edition and preparing for our next program here on 1030, The Voice. And that, of course, is Dave Ramsey with his program talking about money. Always very timely subject. All right. On behalf of Tom, we hope you have a great afternoon. Back with you tomorrow, 12:04. Have a great afternoon.